Hi friends, it's been a minute. How you doing? How have you been since the last time we spoke? Great, I'm glad to hear it. Welcome along to Soundtracking with me, Edith Bowman. This is the second part of our Steve special, as composers Ben Salisbury and Jeff Barrow join me to discuss their score for the film. Now, we've already heard from both the writer of the original book, Shy, and the screenwriter, Max Porter, and leading man, Cillian Murphy, and that is available to listen to now. Now, before we bring the boys in, I wanted to play you a little clip of Brett Goldstein, who is our next guest, talking about his new film for Apple TV, which he co-wrote and stars in. It's called All of You. And, well, here's Brett with a little insight.
We made a short film like 10 years ago, 12 years ago, and the short film is essentially the first 10 minutes of the feature. And it was just about these best friends going for a walk, and he's taking her to a clinic she wants to go to take a test to find her soulmate, and he secretly hopes it's him, and then he finds out it isn't him. And then we just kept coming back to this short film. We kept wanting to come back to these characters, and over 10 years we were doing other things, but we'd keep talking about Simon and Laura. And we kind of mapped out their lives, and then we were like, this is a film. And so we made it, but it's kind of about like it is about love. It's like, what is love? And this idea that there's one person meant for you. It's kind of like, but what about the other people? What I think anecdotally, a lot of people who've watched the film tell me they have a relationship like Simon and Laura, that there's someone in their life or they've had who was like a best friend, but what is this? What is that? Is that not love as well?
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know, we're just trying to make a much more hopefully nuanced and complicated, more realistic story of love, rather than like in a rom-com, the other guy is always boring and a dickhead if it's a love triangle.
Yeah.
So it's very easy to go, we'll just go with the hero because the other guy's a boring dickhead. But in this one, we want to be like, no judgment on any of the characters, and make it really difficult. It's like her husband is her soulmate. There's a reason he's her soulmate, and he's fucking great. So the whole thing is hopefully complicated in a good way, not a bad way.
Brett Goldstein, who's going to be our next guest on the podcast. A lot of fun chatting to Brett. And so to Ben and Jeff, and a big thanks to the team at Invader Records for sharing the score with us in advance. And we'll begin with a cue from it, Shy. Chat to you both about music and your collaboration. I guess, what was the connection that you had when this came up, you know, in terms of working on it? Why did you want to be part of it? Why did you want to create for it?
I've met Cillian already. He loves his music so much. We chatted, and I think he came to see a beat gig, actually. And and we've been chatting for a while.
Yeah, and then this, we heard about this.
Yeah.
And just thought, well, it sounded right up our street. Yeah. But also, Alan then just came over, the producer, Alan, came over with a cut of the film over to Bristol, didn't he?
Well, no, he lives near Bristol anyway.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I thought
anyway.
That as well. But no, he actually, I think he lives in Somerset somewhere.
We watched a cut of the film.
From the start, it was like, usually, you know, when you watch a rough edit, or something is, you know, an assembly cut or whatever. You just kind of go, we get it, it's an assembly cut. This was like absolutely spot on. Yeah. It was like whoever edited it. I know the name of the person who edited it. I can't remember now, but yeah, I think she was absolutely
spot on. And her music choices as well, or the choices between them, you know, the drum and bass that was in there.
Yeah,
it was mapped out much more than almost any other film we've worked on in terms of like the temperature of it, what we needed to do. And it was, so it wasn't even a, there was no, you know, Alan said, so are you up for it? And we were like, well, what do you think, mate? You know, it's like, of course. And that was it, really. So it was a pretty simple thing. You met Killian, decided it'd be great to work together at some point. We saw this and was like, yeah.
Yeah, we're in. Yeah.
And then not just that, just what the film was about.
Yeah.
You know.
It's a really important film, I think. I think for a lot of reasons. It kind of really stays with you as well. I think that the music within it is so important, you know, in terms of for that character for Shy and the other boys as well, in terms of remember being that age and kind of almost like music being the only thing that understood you or the only thing that you had or the thing that made you feel safe or it made you feel. In a way.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things I wanted to ask you is when you saw that rough cut, if that side of it was already in there, if they had that, you know, that kind of sonic thing of those boys and that world already embedded in there.
Yeah, well, I think Max wrote that in.
Did he?
Yeah, really early. I think they're all massive, like, music fans. But especially Max, you know,
with the drum and bass and
the time period and, you know... Just the other day, I saw them do a Q&A, and he was talking about Kruger and Deutschmeister. He had to listen to that in his car on the way, and then Shy would listen to his drum and bass.
And he was very specific about it as well, because we had sort of input into it, and he was like, no, it's got to be this. Here are three or four tracks that it's got to be what Shy would be listening to at that time. And it was like, and we were lucky enough to. Then, you know, Matt, who wrote one of the integral drum and bass pieces that's in the film, we were lucky enough to chat with him.
And Slip Matt, basically.
Yeah.
There was some kind of issue with the track and might not be able to get it and so on. So we just got a hold of him and just said, look, what can we do? What can we help to kind of get this through? You know, because it needs to be this track.
Yeah.
And then, so he did some re-recordings as well. And then we had to make sure that, it wasn't just like a needle drop. It was just an integral part of the score.
Yeah.
You know, vocals were stretched out and we would incorporate that into the score itself. And just, you know, so it wasn't just like, you know, even though it does kind of go
bang.
Yeah. And it has that effect. It's still, if you listen to the score, it's actually this stuff from the drum and bass stuff happening
in
the score earlier. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
The basis then of almost your jumping off point in a way in terms of
there were a number of jumping off points, obviously the drum and bass probably the number one, and then how do you do a score that's got to be very, very different to drum and bass but keep an element of that feel of that vibe, but also the sort of way the film is structured, it's quite a strange way that you go from this very sort of handheld documentary type feel where you don't need any music.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it just starts to shift. And it was, you know, we had a lot of conversations about, you know, you can't have music over any of the opening section apart from, you know, in-world stuff, diegetic stuff that Shy is listening to. And, you know, we've got to creep in somewhere sort of without being noticed. And what would that? So other sort of guiding principles were, we talked about, you know, the music could, when it first hear it, you could sort of go, is that music or is that just the sound of the pipes or the
in the school, in the washing room.
And Steve with his dictaphone, you know, that played a part as well, sort of slightly mangled voices that might sound like. So there are all these sort of things, and the music is incredibly subliminal at the start. And then we had to find a way of sort of weaving it a bit
playing
further.
Inside of Steve's
head. Yeah.
So the tension, it starts growing with him.
Yeah.
With how the tension starts, you know. Yeah. And he kind of goes in really positive in the day, and he's really struggling. But then the struggle really, like when he's trying to teach.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can see, and you know, and his sort of addictions and...
And so there's kinetic energy almost that he has in a way.
And so we really wanted to be careful as well, because our vibe always was, we don't need to overscore this.
Yeah.
The performances are amazing.
I mean,
the editing's amazing, the dialogue, screenplay, you could kill it with over emotion. So our thing actually was, it was Ben's really simple piano motif that, like, let's not make this. I mean, there's strings at the end, and it's slightly, you know, it's an emotional piece at the end, but it wasn't like just, it was, you know, singular strings, solo strings, quartet stuff, rather than big orchestras, because I think it would have killed it.
Yeah.
I think, you know, when you get those films, they're trying to punch you into a kind of feeling. Mm. You didn't have to. You only got to look at Jay's eyes.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like when he's walking into the water, you don't need...
Yeah.
It's almost like you could have done the whole film without music, really. But
yeah.
We kept on saying that. Let's not go mad here, because it's an amazing piece of drama, you know?
Yeah.
How much you appreciate the collaboration between everybody on a project like this, you know, in terms of, but also feeling the story yourselves,
and
having a feeling about what it needs and what it doesn't need.
And that, as we said earlier, was sort of there from the very first time we watched a rough cut, and that sort of shape of it, and knowing it needed to get to this emotional end, but just seeding it very slightly throughout the score. So you've got this very minimal, stark beginning to the score. You've also got elements of psychedelia that you've got to go to in Killian's head.
When he's kind of tripping, really.
Yeah. But then, as Jeff said, you know, well, we've got to get something in there that takes us on an emotional journey without us really realising that we're, you know, so maybe like a really simple piano that could even be like a piano they found in the corridor, played in a way by someone who just went plonk, plonk, plonk. You know, and was playing five notes, and it's got nothing to it, you know, at all musically, really.
Yeah.
But if you can just seed that in and then maybe make that more musical as you go on, and in and those very, very simple chords that could be played by a child actually become the chords for the emotional piece at the end. You know, and that's a way of hopefully making it not feel just tagged on. You know, that's that was our aim.
Because there could have been so many, there's so much going on in the film, really. There's a lot, you know, in terms of the kind of journey that we go on. You know, you feel like you're watching a play at times as well, because it's so, you know, and I heard that Killian was saying that they shot it in kind of, you know, chronological, which is a gift for them as well.
Yeah. It's rare, isn't it?
You really feel that kind of tension building as you go through it naturally. But the different characters, the different relationships that are going on, the kind of fractions, you know, and then the kind of external nature of people coming in, to all these things kind of going on, that you know, there is so much that you could have wanted to or needed to kind of attach music to. But the fact that it's almost like there's a focus for where the music needs to sit and sit around. Is genius.
No, it was like, where can we get, please not play music?
And even right at the very end, what I mean? Even right at the sort of final mix stage, we were stripping stuff out. And, you know, brilliant sound guy in Sengen and Tim, you know, obviously brilliant director. Yeah. And, you know, they were sort of game for that. They were trying things with sound right towards the end at Abbey Road, and we were saying, yeah, no, that's, let's take the music back a bit here.
Let the sound design work. And
It's so interesting, like, each project, it's like starting again with every project, isn't it? It's kind of, you know, you kind of, like, the conversation we've just had is kind of like, where are you starting from? When you both kind of, you know, when you get the rough cut and stuff, do you kind of just, do the two of you sit and chat about it and kind of, and just, you know.
I mean, normally the sitting chatting is the... is the longest period, in a way. I mean, sitting, chatting and messing around. And coming up with, you know, the actual writing of film music, once you know where you're at and you've got a palette of sounds and a clear idea, sort of can happen fairly quickly. The getting to that stage is almost the fun part. And with this, actually, it did happen quite quickly with this, because we were given so much information to base those conversations on. So almost as soon as we watched
it, was very organized when we got it. And that's a dream.
The performances that you mention, is that something you like to influence what you write, how you write? You know, because sometimes when I've spoken to composers, they'll go, oh, if it'd been a different actor playing this role, the score would have been completely different. How much the performances are influencing?
I think, like I said, I just think they were so powerful.
Yeah.
That's more it, yeah. It's not about who was doing it, although the fact that it was these... I mean, I haven't seen performances from young people that good.
And Tracy Ullman.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, amazing.
Please, more. You know what I mean?
Well, everybody. I mean, you know.
Sim, you know, like... Sims is amazing in this.
Can I be honest with you? I didn't know it was her until 2 or 3 months into the project. I had no idea. Because they kept on talking about Little Sim, and I was like going, is she written a track for the end or something like that? I was like, that's her.
It literally was when Killian said, oh, we're thinking about getting Sims to do a track for the end. And we both went, yeah, that's a great idea. We really love her music. Yeah. And then it's like, sort of, but what? Oh, that's why.
We just didn't know. And she was amazing in
it.
Isn't
she great?
Yeah.
I mean, God.
Everybody, like Tracy Ullman, like, you know, it's just, you just go, wow.
Yeah, the casting's amazing. The kids and that, the way that you're able, that they've been able to cast those kids and capture that environment and those relationships and that energy and that kind of just fraughtness.
And we all knew kids like that.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And like...
And you don't want to, and you don't want to get in the way of that, because that, I mean, when we saw the kids and the way they interact, the realness of those performances, there's literally no way you want to enhance fight scenes with dramatic music. But, you know, you just it's happening, it's properly happening in front of you, and you're immersed.
Well, it's documentary,
in it.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
So like, it, as soon as you put music into a documentary style, you just go, oh no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we had to be very careful. It's where it becomes more cinematic, filmic. And it treads that line amazingly, I think. It's quite a strange film in that respect, that it goes from this very handheld thing to quite cinematic moments.
Yeah.
And that's where the music can help make that seem, you know, hopefully make that transition into that change of cinematic style seem justified.
Also, I must say that it's really weird because they shot it down in Froome, didn't they?
Yeah.
And the local news team actually is where we live, the local news team. So Points West, actually, when they said it was Points West, it's like, oh no, this is good. When we first watch it, this is going to be horrific, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I'm not saying that Points West, I think in the past, you know, they would have been news, like that, you know, going through whatever. And I'm sure they're not that like that now. I don't want to get sued.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was like that local news TV trying to get an angle, and you just think, oh, you...
Local news wanting to be Panorama.
Yeah, exactly.
It would be remiss of me to kind of have you here, not just quickly say congratulations on Civil War as well, which I didn't get the chance to kind of chat to you about, and got the chance to chat to Alex about that. What a film.
Well, that was a kind of similar thing in a sense of like how little music we can put into it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we wrote 4 scores for that, I reckon.
Did you?
Yeah, but we always do with
Just bank those.
We've got 4 if anyone wants them. They're just kind of... So it was... that was a long time, wasn't it, working on that film?
That we all got back to the stage, but the conversations we had right at the beginning. This doesn't need very much music, but when it is there, it's impactful. That's the thing.
And it's like 9.5 minutes in the whole film, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amount of music you've written in a film
that's ended up Alex, by
a mile,
a million miles,
because he, you know, like Ex Machina is just wall to wall, music,
and,
you know,
and there's always like a 15-minute scene where it's just music, you know, which is great for us, but this was good to do it
the opposite.
But what kind of is that thing where, isn't it, where as composers, you've got to, you're facilitating the story and the character, it's the bigger picture, and I guess that was one for example. I mean, those needle drops are genius, you know, in terms of kind of like the kind of way that they literally turn things around, or you're like, what? You know, De La Soul and all that. It's like, it's amazing.
De La Soul was the one because it was like, that was Alex. Scene. Yeah, we scored that scene.
Oh, yeah, about 3-4 different times.
Yeah.
And then when
not
Alex.
Better at
no,
all.
No, but then when Alex said, I've just come up with this idea, I'm going to put De La Soul over that sequence to see what you think. And we honestly thought he was joking. And then we saw it and we're like, oh, I get what you mean.
Well, it doesn't work.
Yeah, because it doesn't work.
And it's like, how many layers of Alex Garland can you... can you go? And they're all genius, basically.
With Invader and the kind of the support you've given sort of, you know, film music and releases and things, that is incredible. And so excited about Invader Films.
Yeah.
And that being a similar kind of brilliant platform for independent and new filmmakers as well. And games about to kind of come.
Yeah, so. Exactly. I mean, you know, we've just launched the trailer to Invader Films' first film. We've both worked on it.
And
you know, it's incredibly low budget and we're at the very starts of things. But... Jason Williams, and Mark, it's just a two-hander.
Yeah.
But, it's a kind of exciting times. It's kind of just a new, you know, like new challenges. And this is it, really.
What do you want it to be, Invader Films? What's the kind of the aim for it, really?
I think the way with British films at the moment, we can't compete with, like, you know, $50 million A24 films, you know.
Yeah.
And they're amazing. So I think, you know, low budget... But with stuff that appeal, you know, it's stuff that appeals that is interesting stories, really. You know, I mean, we've made game for 160,000, you know,
which is unheard of. Yeah,
and so it's nice to have a little bit more than that, of course. Yeah. You know what I mean? But
it just shows you what you can do, because it's really powerful.
What you can
film.
Do. And you only look at like things, you know, like Blair Witch, and you look at those films that were made very, very cheaply. And it's just, and I think that with technology now, you can, young people, not just young people, the people who want to make a film all their life, you know what I mean? And done some other job, and now they get it, you know, because of cameras and Apple Macs and everything else, they can do that. So we'll see where it goes. I mean, you know, we've got to find a proper home for, you know, Game first, and then, but it's going to be in cinemas in November, so I can get my plug in there, basically.
Yeah, for sure, definitely. We'll be doing it close to the time, don't you, Wayne?
Yeah, great.
Look forward to what's next from you both, and congratulations on Steve's. Great to chat to you as always.
From their score to Steve, that's Backpack by Ben Salisbury and Jeff Barrow, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtrackin'. My huge thanks to Ben and Jeff, and also the team at Invader, for providing us with the music ahead of time. Ben and Jeff as well, just as well as doing, you know, great scores for film, the work that Jeff and his team at Invader do behind the scenes to support soundtracks and get them out there is absolutely extraordinary and needs to be commended. If you want to hear my previous chats with the boys, you can find them at edithbowman.com. There's a particularly brilliant one that we did with Alex Garland around Annihilation way back in the day at Everyman Cinema in Hampstead. So maybe go and seek that one out. As well as my various conversations with Killian, they're also up on edithbowman.com as well. Now give us a follow on your socials if you wouldn't mind. We're at Soundtracking UK, and we'd be eternally grateful if you'd subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is called Soundtracking Extra, and has got all that wonderful content up there, visual versions of the podcast, exclusive content, including a really lovely chat with a whole gaggle of people involved in the film I Swear. So head over there and get subscribed and check out the channel. Now, as I mentioned at the top of the show, we're joined by Brett Goldstein next. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company next.